The word open systems really opened something up to me because I had never thought of it. I would always say, and trying to explain to people, I'm not trying to teach you to recite stuff to me. You know, I'm not a leader. I'm not somebody that you, I tell you something and you repeat it to me. You know, I'm trying to guess. Now, Sam, that villain over there, he got me in this monkey suit. Look at him. But there was one part about making a speech that in his class he wouldn't have mentioned. If he was talking about, if you're a good speaker, this is how you give a speech. Well, if you're me, you either bring a lot of slides or a lot of handouts. So what I've got handouts, I've got the mantra here. And I have to look it up myself sometimes. So if I could just pass it around while other things are going on.
Plenty of them. Huh? They're all the same.
Also, my notes are on top of it. Oh, as to what? When you get asked what? Now this is sort of guidelines. Talking about in an open system, what we're going to use hasn't been invented yet. We have to go with the system, you know, with what's available to us. But there's another thing I say when people, I warn my people, don't, if they ask if you're on Jews or segregation or this, that, and the other, I say the first thing we want is to speak about it. We're not going to talk about it as long as we can't discuss it. As long as we're in your backyard. As long as every time we have to use their language. As long as this political correctness is here, we cannot come to a sane conclusion. So what we're doing is attacking them and not letting them attack back, because they won't let us attack. You follow me? You have to have freedom of speech. We have to be able to use our own language. Like, and in personal conversation, this takes some getting used to, and you know, with certain people you don't do it if you're trying to get a job or something. But the word anti-white is what I use now in everyday conversation. I'll be talking to somebody and I'll say, from the anti-white point of view, and this causes a certain buzz. I just sat there and accused this everyday white man of being anti-white. And, of course, that allows me to get all the points in. Also makes them avoid me a lot. But you can get, just by using this term, it always bothers me when people miss a chance to use anti-white or something like this, or if they get trapped into saying, do you believe in the Hitler solution or the this solution or that solution? Don't discuss it. We are not allowed free discussion, so damn it, we're not going to discuss it until we get the freedom to do so freely. I had some kids out in Arizona asked me to come speak to them, and I found that the best part of the meeting was at the questions, because my expertise, I was congressional staff, presidential speechwriter, stuff like that, and putting things, how to put things, is my professional specialty. So they enjoy that. I did want to say Chuck Roy man, he's a soldier ready. But Chuck, when I was on Don's show there, he mentioned a couple. I wasn't able to address it. That me and Don had had successes in our career with our methods, you know, with David's runs, you know, for office, and in my case, there's a lot of stuff I did as a congressional staff, and I worked with the whole program of making somebody have the president actually say the evil empire. If you're out here, that doesn't make much difference. And if you're inside, you know, behind the Iron Curtain, that made quite a bit of difference when Reagan said that. And when Reagan said, "Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall," he had to reinsert that in his speeches three times. So there were people like me, and there were people like them. And it's hard to tell an American how much that had to do with bringing, just putting it right. Those people are back there, and thank God somebody said it, you know. Terminology is desperately important. And these opportunities, like I said, the opportunity when you're talking to somebody, I say, from the anti-white point of view. And you have to get used to doing that, but it's an opportunity. Everything's an opportunity. I mean, you get to explain your... It's not easy for regular people to do this, but a little bit of confrontation, you got to make your own. So I think that's about all I've got to say, and I did give you a handout too. So.
We can take some questions. Does anyone have any questions? Anyone want to fire off a question?
Or comments?
Or comments, for better or worse? Go ahead.
The question is, they say, what's the reason of blending out white countries?
The what?
What should our answer be? I heard that on the...
I didn't understand the question.
He said, what if someone asked...
Why would they be?
That's a fascinating question. Why would the people in charge try to create a blended humanity in white countries and only white countries? And
there's control.
It's a control. There's a belief that if you have a small homogenous group, it's much easier to control a very diverse group with a lot of fighting or a totally mixed population than a homogenous population.
Absolutely. So face to face.
Yeah, but of course, I think it's important there to agree that white genocide is occurring before you get into the reason why it's occurring.
Well, I don't go into reasons why. There's several, you know, you could talk about the reason within the confines of the globalist agenda or whatever. It is occurring. That's all we, you know,
right.
We can debate. We can let the historians debate how it came about and who actually put the plans in motion when. We don't know all that yet. We just know it's in motion. It's what's happening, and fighting is what's important.
I like to use the mantra, but depending on which forum I'm in, because I'm all over the internet, okay? And so what I'm saying is I like to use the mantra, but I like to weave it in. I get people sucked into a conversation and put it in. But also, just a little note, I find that a very effective phrase or a very effective statement is white people don't owe black people, because it's usually about black and white conversation. White people don't owe black people or any other race anything. You know what I mean? Because one of the things that's, I think, our mentality and our mindset is unique. We care about moral issues, we care about ideas, other groups don't. And so that's how it's been used against us. And so I think freeing white people of the moral responsibility, the big down white burden, is really important. And people seem to respond to that depending on the circumstances, because I like to tailor it to the circumstances. But also, you want to ask another question. The big question I get that really disturbs me is when people say, well, who cares if there's a white race?
One could only imagine someone flooding Africa with non-Africans and saying, you know what, we're going to have a blended humanity in only Africa, but who really cares about black people? Of course, when Tibet was being flooded with by the Chinese, with Chinese nationals and the Tibetan nomads, they were trying to force integrate them. You know, the UN didn't say, who cares? The UN declared genocide immediately. So in Marin County, California is being forced to integrate just because it's too white. It's 98-99% white. That's called progressive policy. Our job is to point out the difference. Okay. Once our race sees the difference, what our race likes to do is fight other white people.
Yes.
Only white people will come and protest white people, meaning as white people.
Yes.
You know, maybe a couple blacks will show up, but basically it's white people showing up to protest white people. Only white people will show up at Stormfront with some Stormfront people in a restaurant and attack them. Only white people do that. But what I do with the dynamics between white rabbits and pink rabbits, I say our enemy looks like us but has no loyalty to us. I make it very broad. Jew, Gentile, white, we have a huge problem at the top. But once they realize that this stuff fights the whites in power, that's what they like. They want to fight the whites in power. And this is the way it goes. This is the way you do it.
Can I say one more thing?
Go ahead. Right. What does that got to do with white genocide? What does that have to do with white genocide? Right. What does that, that's what I always ask.
Actually,
yeah.
One thing it has to do with it is that Hitler said about Jews the same thing that the present establishment says about white Gentiles. And then?
Yeah, our enemy didn't disagree with, one thing I always say is our enemy never disagreed with Joseph Goebbels became the great propagandist of the late 20th century. Our enemy never disagreed with Joseph Goebbels or Hitler. They just disagreed on who they wanted to genocide. That doesn't make them any better. I point that out to them, and they're the biggest genocidal freaks on this planet, is our enemy at the top. And everyone is starting to realize that all over the planet. You have a lot of, just recently a U.S. ambassador was dragged out and killed because he's a U.S. ambassador. Obviously, your policy in the area has failed if that's occurring. You obviously don't have any diplomatic solutions there. What you're doing is wrong. But, of course, the powers that be just want to keep doing the same thing.
I was going to say, we talked about this in Australia, just about explaining how political correctness is what a religion almost become a dogma.
It is a religion.
And they just continually parrot it out. It's about, as you said, finding effective measures to combat it. So,
yeah, they're no longer burning red-haired witches alive. Now they're trying to, the Jane Elliots of the world, the anti-whites are trying to humiliate little white kids and burn them alive for racism. It's the same thing all over again. But we point that out. But, the key thing with a consistent message is that it's just so overpowering once you get your terminology, because terminology, again, precedes ideology. And that's what we look to do. That's the first step. But, I get stuff from the CFCC all the time, CFCC.org, Council of Conservative Citizens. They put out some great educational stuff on political correctness. I'm all for that. My particular job, and we take stuff in bite size, our particular job is revolves around this message, the mantra, terminology like anti-white, phrases including white genocide, and getting out this message and using cutting-edge media techniques to do that, not just podcasts anymore, but animations, to try to drive it further and further, the debate. And in the first phase of animations, we are mixing unconscious, subconscious associations people have. Everyone in the world knows who Hitler is. As many people know about Hitler as they would Jesus nowadays. It's so ridiculous. But we're using that, and we're slamming that together with something that they've also heard, that diversity is wonderful. Go ahead.
On this thing about why you would want to have a white nation or whatever, I think Stan Dixon could approach this from a social biological standpoint, in that people tend to marry other people who are physically like them, because that means they have this.
Well, it's much simpler than that. Without a country, we can't survive. That's why the Chinese have a country so they can live. The Japanese have a country so they can live. Right now, everyone on this planet, every little group, if you look at the online as a growth of nationalist and tribalist movements, everyone wants they have their own website. They want their own country to go with it.
Yeah.
Without a country, we can't survive. We have the whole top of the planet. We have North America. Our race is occupying much of South America, parts of South America, North America, including Canada. We have under control of our military apparatus, we have Europe, we have the UK, we have Iceland, all of Russia. We have Australia. We don't have a home. No one's ever stood up and said, you know what, I like my white kids. I think I'm going to keep them that way. No one says this type of thing. And we need to start bringing this out into a public debate, and that's what we're doing. Why is that? Why is that? Well, it's white rabbit genocide. I have a simple explanation, but it's the way we're moving our message forward. But without a country, you can't survive. It's real simple. You know, usually when you're in these conversations with people, there's a knee-jerk reaction, a Pavlov's dog reaction, and they say what mommy professor educated them in the saying. You know, oh, it doesn't matter if everyone gets blended out of existence. Usually they talk in universals. You know, it's kind of like, you know, talking about blending the races. No one has ever once talked about blending the races. They're only talking about blending our race. Chinese, yeah, they're all fine. Africans are fine over there in Africa. They're only talking about blending out white kids, force integrating white kids. And you need to point out this, that what we're doing is pointing out that the system is closed. It's a closed system. And trying to invoke that biological imperative to start rebelling against that. Go ahead. You can do whatever you want to do.
All right, now getting people to start asking questions like about why does the U.S. have bases overseas? Why is there U.S. foreign policy all over the world? That might help. You know.
Well, you know, right now they're cooking up some big war. If you have half a brain and you watch the media, you realize there's going to be some type of conflict they're brewing.
Stay on message.
And well, my job on the podcast is I sell digital media, and one thing people like to have is my news of the world. So that's kind of what he's asking about, just so you know. But one of the things I tell him is that, you know, obviously there's an agenda, and obviously the agenda is globalist. They got bases all over the world. None of us have ever voted or authorizing it. But what you need to understand is that part of the agenda we can sit and talk about formally, informally, whatever. But one key part of that agenda that no one can deny is white genocide. Because that's part of their agenda as well. That's the key point of the globalist agenda. That is the keystone of this closed structure. Isn't necessarily their control of the media industrial complex, it's their control of our race and what they want to do with our race. And that always involves white genocide. And if someone doesn't believe that, stand up and start talking about it, and you'll find it out pretty quickly. You know, just recently in the media publications that advertise, and over at WhitakerOnline.org, we get into this type of stuff, because usually if we're mentioned, if White Rabbit Radio or anything like that mentioned in one press release, they'll redact it and erase it once they include that in the AP root pieces. But the Tennessean or whatever had included me for the first time, saying they were trying to didn't have contact information. Anyone get a hold of me. But they said that, and they mentioned White Rabbit Radio. But in all the other releases of that, it was taken out, that whole entire paragraph. But any time a consistent message comes online in a society that looks professional, that is backed by someone that actually knows how to write them at a very high level, it becomes a very big concern, because if you control the message, you control society. So the thing that they'll do is just try to ignore it. But it's a big boon to us, and that's what we like to see, them trying to ignore it.
I was just saying one other thing. I think that any exposure in the media is good exposure.
Oh, no doubt about it. I hope they include us all the time, but they never do.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. That's why getting it out there is one thing, because it's not going to avoid it. But when I say the Tennessean thing, even that, people I talked to were offended by it, the most recent one about this conference. But the key thing in that was the fact that the police, an official authority, said, well, there was nothing wrong with them last year.
Yeah.
So that's giving a signal to anybody who's reading an anti-white message that there's nothing wrong with these people. You know what I mean? So, like, any kind of exposure, we shouldn't be running away from it.
Oh, no, it's fantastic. But we always want to see the enemy going by the paradigm. The paradigm regards to consistent message is ignore it, get around it, don't do anything at all to expose it, because there's no such thing as bad media exposure. There's no such thing. So, you know, that is typically what you should do with a consistent message like this, and that's what they do. They go out of their way. The SPLC doesn't write actual reports about how whites took over America or White Rabbit Radio. I don't know exactly what their internal memos are saying, but they're very well aware of what we're doing. But I think it's interesting how they actually, for the first time, gave us a paragraph, and then took it out. Then editors took it out the second time. It's not mentioned at all.
You can use it, though.
Oh, sure. We pulled it up online in the archives, and we got the original one to use. I think it's entertaining. But that is, people always say, well, why can't we find out about you guys from the SPLC ADL? Like, you don't understand. Why isn't Pink Rabbits in the hate crime database? It's one simple reason. That's intellectual property. What we're doing is radically different. It's not an Iron Cross. It's not a swastika. You start putting that in a hate crime database, guess, or a hate symbol database, you're opening yourself up to a lawsuit. Now, what is hate? Because this is intellectual property. I'm selling T-shirts with that in. You want to debate that in court? Even if I lose, boom, it explodes in your face. They don't want to address consistent messages like this at all because of the problem they had in the Soviet Union. As soon as they addressed it, the whole thing came unraveled. They have so cornered themselves. You know, they are always arguing a position that always puts us in a world without white people. They have always put into place policies to bring about that world. They are in a corner. Their media is more and more in the corner. The difference is we are calling them out. You don't want to get called out. They much rather have you on your so-called conservative and debate. They love doing this and debate whether or not something is or isn't a hate crime or some of these canned debates. They don't want to have anyone on there to talk about what it is, genocide. They don't want to have anyone on there that's going to point out the obvious that this is for white countries and only white countries. Okay, I don't know if we got to get moving, or if there can be more questions. Any other questions?
Regarding colonialism and how you can justify that, the new world.
What they will always do is this: they will always turn around and say, "Well, you deserve it." The first thing they're going to do is say, "White genocide's not happening. This is, you know, conspiracy stuff, website stuff. It's not occurring. Move along. Nothing to see, nothing to say." Then they're going to turn around and justify it. They will always do this. You deserve it for what you did to the Indians. All you have to do at that point in time is ask one question. You just said it wasn't occurring. How can you justify something you say is not occurring? Don't get off subject. Keep asking the question. So-called conservatives you see on Fox News always never answer questions of our enemy. All you have to do is ask the questions and keep asking it. And as soon as they try to get off, because you got them, they're going to try to go up somewhere else. Don't try to show them how smart you are in knowing about colonialism, because I'm sure you know all about that. Just keep asking them this. You just said white genocide is not happening. If something's not happening, how can you justify it? How can you justify something you say is not occurring? So what you're doing is telling them you're lying. You know, another thing you can ask any of these big anti-whites and just keep asking it, just say, do you deny you support white genocide? You know, I always say, are you pro-white or are you pro-white genocide? It's an iron question. That's the iron question in other form. Do you deny that you support white genocide? I've never got them to answer that one way, shape, manner, form. Usually what they'll deny is the method they're using of assimilation in white countries and forced integration and all this immigration is genocide. And then I'll say, well, that's not the same thing. You're saying the method you're using to kill white kids is not genocide. It's genocide in Tibet. It's genocide every time some indigenous group like the Aborigines in Australia uses it, but it's not genocide for us. What I'm asking you is quite simple. Do you deny you support white genocide? And they'll always, what it does is it creates a good movement for everyone, a good feeling for everyone around that. They'll realize that these people are nuts. They're genocidal freaks. Go ahead, Mr. Dixon.
If I can advise you, what you can do, you can support yourself with UN definition of genocide, which basically states... You can Google and pick it up. I put it here.
Yeah, it's very concrete.
Mixing two ethnic groups, they were referring to Soviet Union. It is genocide.
Forced integration, forced assimilation.
Integration. It is genocide. It is disappearance of what ethnic group? Well, yes, all in U.S. here.
Sure. What we're doing is taking the high moral grounds.
If you put UN definition, you know, in front of people, they are shut up immediately.
Yeah, it's the legal definition.
And the other about a problem with people who say that you protect a white people who are protected. No, you can say always that you love diversity. You don't protect only whites, but also black. Wouldn't you like your black disappear from the planet or white? Actually, I am true for diversity. So we have a white, we have a wolf.
Mr. Dixon, go ahead.
I want to say first how much I enjoyed when the whites came to America.
How whites took over America? Okay. Thank you.
At first I thought maybe I should shut this off, but the more I watched it, it just got greater and greater.
Yeah, I didn't edit that. We didn't edit that down. The next one is going to be under 7 minutes, so we're going a little bit shorter because that's what Miami Herald did. They skipped the first 4 minutes, so I'm glad you liked it, though.
But there are three little points. One is, and you're very good about this, asking questions. When you're talking to somebody, and they're giving you the spiel, they're giving you their recorded thing. One way to interrupt that is to ask them a question. That way they're doing the talking, and they feel that, well, now I get to talk. Everyone, they're rarely, actually have what we ought to have in an ideal society, that people sit down at a table and actually want to communicate and want to find out what the other person thinks of this kind of thing. Most people are sitting at a dinner party or whatever thinking, when is my turn coming? They're on the edge of their chair, make their point. And they want to do the talking. Fine. You do. You're good at asking questions. You ask them. I like to ask questions like, "I want my race to survive. Can I desire this without being per se evil?" And this is part of why is this evil? And they have to is it evil for me to want my race to survive?
And I would actually follow that up with, why is it evil for only whites to desire this?
Well, that's another point.
Next point.
The greatest point we have, one of the greatest points, is the inconsistency in our enemy's message.
Oh, yes.
Simultaneously, they say Israel is good. And I've made this point many times. Israel is so good that they don't let anybody even sit down and negotiate with Israel. Palestinians are required to accept Israel's right to exist. But no one says when they sit down with Horace the Avenger, or Bob Whitaker, or Sam Dixon, that they are required to admit that the white ethnocide ought to exist. I mean, they can't do that.
Right.
And so the Israel thing is a great thing. I tell Jews, because it's a waste of time, but we're talking to the audience. But I ask Jews, well, you want an ethnostate in Israel, and all we want is what you have. It's just a matter of reciprocity.
Right.
And it's very hard. People like phonies like Hillary Clinton, sociopaths, that are pimping them, have a hard time with that. They say, oh no, Israel, it's okay for them to have their ethnostate, but it's immoral.
Right.
You to have
all Jews have to be preserved, and all Gentiles have to be put in a melting pot.
I mean, genocide, basically.
Yeah, they're nuts. Trying to understand the dual mindset is very difficult. Is there any other questions? Can we move on? Okay.
Well, I just had one question.
Go ahead. We'll let this be the last.
Since he mentioned Israel,
okay.
Is there ever a good time to mention Jews? Will that ever not lead you down a tangent?
You can talk. It depends on the conversation. Every conversation is about Jewish, double standards. I'm known as an anti-Semite. I don't have a problem with that. I always say, I'll stop. Anyone that opposes the Jewish elites are going to get called an anti-Semite, and I'll stop being anti. I'll stop worrying about being called an anti-Semite, or start worrying about it, I guess, when you start stop being so anti-white.
Yeah.
The Jewish elites are virulently anti-white, so I don't see any reason to hide it. Right now, the whole world wants to fight them. So I think it's time for us to start putting it on the table very bluntly and directly and truthfully, because what we're dealing with here is the truth. They operate under ridiculous double standards that no human can operate under for any length of time, and it's actually killing them.
One comment or response that you're going to find actually in our society today, even in America, with the massive Jewish propaganda, you're going to find more positive response to criticizing Israel than criticizing the actions against the white race. Way more.
Yeah.
And that, in fact, you can even use that as an opening to circuitously come back around with that question. But it's, you don't have to say everything at one time, though. Everybody, we're so anxious to talk all the time. You don't have to give them the whole truth about everything, Second World War and all. Just, if you're in a relationship with someone, take it slow and easy. Let them come to the conclusions, like Sam says, ask them questions. Let them come to the conclusions rather than you do it. I'll talk about that more in my talk.
You can't talk until I introduce you. Okay, we're going to move on now, and I really appreciate that. This is a practical politics seminar.